Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's CANNAinsider.com. Now here's your program. The end of federal prohibition of cannabis is on the horizon, and we're entering a new, more mature phase of growth for cannabis retailers and growers. As we do, we see attitudes and strategies changing and evolving. Here to tell us more about this is Matt Hawkins, chairman of Harborside and managing partner of Entourage Effect Capital. Matt, welcome to Canna Insider.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of geography. Where are you in the world today?
I'm in Dallas, Texas, where I live, and we have an office here, but our investment firm, Entourage Effect Capital, is headquartered here and in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay, great. There's a ton of people moving to Dallas. How does that feel being in the center of that?
Yeah, here in Austin are big. It seems like everybody's escaping California and some of the places in the Northeast and coming here in Florida.
Yeah, it does. Well, most listeners have heard of Harborside, but maybe don't know what your involvement is. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing at Harborside and also Entourage Effect Capital?
Sure. So let's see. I've been in private equity for 20 plus years. Started Entourage Effect Capital, formerly known as Cresco Capital Partners, back in 2014 to take advantage of what I was hopeful would be an opportunity to invest in the quasi-legalized cannabis space, and was hoping to be able to raise some money to be able to do just that. And luckily, we've been successful. We've raised a fair amount of money. We've made 66 investments to date, all throughout the supply chain of the legalized cannabis industry. And one of our first investments was in Flourish Farms, which was the farm in Salinas that was a subsidiary company of Harborside, not wholly owned because it was before 2016 when the laws changed for adult use in California.
Okay.
And then we merged that into the parent company Harborside when the laws changed. And we led the Series A financing, and I've been on the board since then through the RTO and now, but we expressed some displeasures with the way, the previous board was not necessarily operating. In fact, because we really didn't have a problem with the way things were going, but just there was just a lack of expediency, and we wanted to move quicker to try to make this the preeminent single state operator in California. And so we led along with one of the largest shareholders of the company, Roger Jenkins, we led a dissenting shareholder movement back in the fall, and we luckily settled with the company before we were going to instigate a proxy fight, but we took over the board. And now we're doing, really focused on three things. One, we're in the process of hiring a world-class CEO. We're going to settle and retire the 280E liability that we have with the IRS, which has been a bit of a thorn in our side just because the founders at various times were a bit antagonistic with the IRS on not wanting to pay it. And then lastly, we're going to execute on some pretty significant M&A activity to, like I said, get us to the position of being, if not the preeminent, one of the preeminent single state operators in California.
Okay. How has what you've been doing the last 20 years in private equity kind of set you up to make Harborside a success, would you say?
I would say that we've done this in different industries. We know how M&A works. We know how, fast things move. We know how to raise money. We know, it's really, I've always said since I've been in this game is that you really just take out the word widgets and insert cannabis. I mean, there's the business principles, whether it's operations or investing, are all the same. So you got to just, for investors, you got to back the right management teams. And that's what we're in the process of doing at Harborside. And we're operationally, you got to just focus on P&L. That's what we're doing there too. It sounds pretty simplistic, but at the end of the day, the things that we're just doing the things we said we were going to do. And we're on track to meet a lot of our goals, quite early in the process.
Okay. Yeah, I want to get more into that. So this next chapter here for Harborside, you mentioned it's like you just replace the word widget. And, you know, there's a lot of basic blocking and tackling that could be done, you know, more, a better execution. So what does that mean specifically then? Like increasing profit margins, picking the right products that are sold. What do you kind of, how do you stack rank those?
Sure. All the above. I mean, just to kind of give some background on Harborside, I mean, you know, we've been around since, back in the early days of the medicinal program when Steve D'Angelo founded it. But then obviously in 06, we were one of the first legal dispensaries in the United States set up at our flagship in Oakland.
Right.
We've got 5 dispensaries in operation in Oakland, San Jose, San Leandro, San Francisco, Desert Hot Springs, and we have 1 in Oregon on top of that. We've got one of the only legal, 2 legal drive-throughs in the entire state of California. We also have a 47-acre production campus in Salina that has, you know, 210,000 square feet of greenhouses, where we've got about 160,000 of that is square feet of that is canopy. And we're a pretty decent-sized company. You know, we've got $63 million in 2020 with net, probably 10 to 15% of that in net EBITDA. So a lot of things that we want to do are twofold. One, as I mentioned, grow through the acquisition of others and have a bigger footprint, both from the retail standpoint, but also be able to utilize that production facility we have by becoming a preeminent wholesaler. And then secondly, we want to get to the point to where we're maximizing our efficiencies, you know, with that current revenue that we have currently. So it's kind of a twofold approach, and we've got the team operationally to do it. And especially when we add the CEO hire we're about to have, we're going to be well equipped to succeed.
Can you share who that CEO is going to be, or is that still private?
No. I mean, we just engaged, Heidrick & Struggles a couple of weeks ago to help with that search, but I actually have a call this afternoon to go through a list of candidates with them. So we're moving along.
Okay. So you're going to utilize that, that farm. And what about margins? What can you tell us about the realities of profit margins in this space?
Sure. Well, that's exactly one of the reasons why we need to get a larger retail footprint and utilize, you know, the wholesale capabilities that we have, because with our own products, you could make, you know, sometimes 70-80% gross margin on those. When you stock other people's products on your shelf, you may have 50% gross margin. So capitalizing on that, along with our suite of brands, Harborside Farms and Key, are really a big focus of ours. And that's, like you said, just to capture more margin.
Okay. You mentioned earlier an RTO. For people who don't know, that's reverse takeover. Can you talk a little bit about, are we going to see more of those first, do you think?
Question. Back in 17 and 18 is when the craze on the Canadian Security Exchange occurred. It all was a result of the Canadian companies that started when Canada went legal. Their model was, let's build as much wholesale as we can and then outsource to other countries once they become legal. It was, my personal opinion, a flawed model, because once other countries were able to come online, you know, the cost structure in Canada to grow is such that they can't compete with the low cost structures of, say, South America or even Mexico for that matter, and even parts of the United States, primarily due to the climate. But then there was a big change when most of those companies were listed on the Toronto Exchange, which is the big board, but the Toronto Exchange wouldn't allow those companies to own U.S. assets. The Canadian Securities Exchange, on the other hand, said, not only will we allow cannabis companies to list, but we will allow you to own U.S. assets. And so that's when this whole thing started, of finding shell companies that existed on the CSE to then become, to merge into U.S.-owned companies to then get public listings. And so that's where you had this crazy inflow of capital that was, as we all know, what goes up must come down. And that's what happened in late 18 and 19, when we had the crash. But it served its purpose. I mean, I think now with the we'll probably, I'm sure, at some point talk about this discussion of just how imminent legalization probably is with the new administration, and the fact that the Georgia seats became Democrat. There's a better chance for legalization sooner rather than later here. And as a result, you've seen marijuana stocks go up dramatically since November.
Okay. And in terms of like a pie chart and how Harborside's revenue breaks down, where are flower, edibles, vape cartridges, that type of thing, in percentage wise, in terms of sales?
Yeah. So I would say that, it's about the same sales trends that are statewide averages. Like we've got about 40 million of shelf space in California on the retail side of our business. And so about 40% of that is flower, 30% of that is vape and extracts, and the other 25% are other ingestibles like gummies, et cetera. We also retail live plants, which are about 5%. On the wholesale side, about 90% of the product is sold in bulk form, with the other 10 sold as CPG goods.
Yeah.
We really started ramping up that business in the fourth quarter and expect it to be a big growth opportunity for us going forward. You know, and product selection is expanding across the board, you know, statewide and from a distribution standpoint in California.
Okay. So in 2020, you urged cannabis companies to be more humble and get deals done. What do you mean by the humility part and the getting deals done? What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, operators and owners and founders had way, way high opinions of themselves that were getting in the way of getting M&As done. I mean, look, we need to be in a consolidation mode as an industry right now, because in advance of legalization, it's our opinion that, you know, once that happens, or once even the States Act passes, where, you know, hopefully that's when the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange will allow listings. But when that happens, you're going to have institutional capital, big pharma, tobacco, alcohol, nutraceuticals, CPG companies, all rushing into space with billions upon billions of dollars. And they would much rather buy, you know, companies with large scale. And so my point of saying that was, guys, just and gals, come to the table with realistic valuations. Let's look at enterprise values versus what your last raise was privately. And let's get deals done. Because at the end of the day, if you can price it right, you're going to have built-in upside when this exit occurs. And unfortunately, too many private owners are just saying, no, I raised money at $300 million. That's my value. And we all know that's just a pile of you-know-what. So,
Yeah. I mean, so the expectations are high, but are they coming down? Are they starting to trend down a little?
Yeah, I think a little bit, but not. But you're also seeing public values going up too right now. So it's working both ways a bit. I think private companies are realizing that now is the time, but the ones that don't realize that are going to get left behind.
Just like Zillow lets you browse for properties to buy or rent online, there is a company doing the same thing in the cannabis and hemp space. 420 Property lets you browse cannabis and hemp real estate and even businesses that are for sale. Get started for free at 420property.com. That's the numerals 420property.com. Now back to your program. So for listeners that aren't familiar, there's a regulation called 280E that prevents companies like Harborside and other cannabis retailers from, or other just cannabis businesses in general, from deducting normal business expenses. Matt, if that were to go away, what impact would that have on the cannabis market, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, it would be an amazing shot in the arm, because if it was just taxed like a normal product, so, I mean, we could eliminate 50% of our tax.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, most businesses, I guess, you know, my God, it's somewhere like 20-30%. tax burden. I mean, there's companies in the marijuana business that are paying somewhere between 70-80%.
Yeah.
So it's the high tax is probably the most significant challenge to running a viable marijuana business. And the way this 280E works is that by the time the marijuana products reach the store, the products are ready for sale, leaving very few costs that fall within the cost of goods sold definition. And the retail costs are not deductible. And so, like I said, most marijuana companies are paying that 70%. So it's disproportionate. And so if it goes away, that you can imagine that would be a huge benefit.
Yeah. And if it does go away, that means more profit than for the cannabis businesses. Will they take a good chunk of that pop profit, you think, lower prices and compete more with the black market? Or will they just move that profit to shareholders?
Well, it's a good question. I think a combination of two is probably what the case is. But we also need, we're talking about federal taxation too. California is a prime example of a state that has a high tax burden at the state side. So if California were smart, and by the way, Gavin Newsom, prior to the pandemic, had expressed interest in working with the industry about this, but states would generate more revenue if they just realized that they could lower the tax. They would convert a larger portion of the black market that exists, because when that happens, you then have more people going to the dispensaries. We've seen it. The pandemic, that's why we started seeing such incredible spikes at the stores, is that folks were uncomfortable buying their product from the street corner. And now with safety mechanisms in place, with curbside pickup and delivery, and we've converted a decent portion of the illicit market during the pandemic. And for that to continue, we need the help of the states to reduce that tax burden. And guess what? More of these company customers will start buying it from the legalized stores. It's very simple stuff. It's just, for whatever reason, the bureaucrats don't get it sometimes.
Right. Yeah. So with this new administration in D.C., what do you think is going to bring? I mean, we talked about 280E, but do you think they'll just, and they've got a majority, the Democrats have a majority in Congress. So do you think it's likely then we're going to see some sort of cannabis legislation and maybe banking legislation too?
Yeah, I think the Safe Banking Act will almost certainly pass in some form or fashion. I mean, that's, the Senator Crapo on the Republican side, who was the banking chair on the Senate, just showed no interest in getting that done. Obviously, with the Democrat in there, I think that you'll see, at least some movement. I don't think it's going to be federally legalized, within the next 4-5 years, meaning, crossing state lines and things like that. I think what we will see is in 2 to 3 years tops, we'll see something like the STATES Act pass. And that's really all it takes to get institutional capital involved. And at that point, it's really like the alcohol laws are now. I mean, every state has a different framework for how they regulate their alcohol. And so I really believe that's the way it'll be in cannabis.
Okay. And then when that happens, does that change your view of how important vertical integration is? That is, producing your own flower and so forth, or do you think specialization starts to become more important?
Well, both. I think that, like, for example, when it goes state to state, I don't think you'll be seeing product going across state lines, because those states don't want to lose that revenue. I mean, California, for example, would have no interest in allowing cultivators from other states bring their product into their state, because that would be a huge tax impact on California.
Right.
So I think we'll still see it in its current construct, just with the federal illegality removed. And therefore, you'll see more capital come into the fold, but then you'll still have you may be able to do some national marketing campaigns so that the brands will become a little bit more easily moved from state to state, because right now, obviously, there's no radio, there's no TV, there's barely even billboards, for that matter, in some states. So I think that part will become easier, but it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out.
And so, as you mentioned, you're based in Texas, but Harborside's in California. You probably spend a lot of time in both.
Well, remember, I mean, I'm not executive chairman. So we're, you know, we, you know, our role as a board is to, you know, just to, you know, to help, you know, govern and make sure that, you know, the management team is doing what they said they're going to do. And that's why, you know, that's why they're in place to do that. It does make it hard. You know, the pandemic makes it hard to travel. I mean, once we get on the other side of this, we will spend a lot of time there. My God, before the pandemic, I was on the road every week anyway. So it's no, you know, it'll be no difference to me than what it was previously.
Okay. I'm curious, you know, you say you have a private equity background. When you look at what's happening at a national level with debt at 130% of GDP, I think several trillion dollars printed in 2020, and then another $2 trillion above what's normally done. What do you think of USA Corporation and how it's doing?
I mean, I'll give you two answers. One, the good news for the cannabis sector is that we have no debt. Any debt that's taken on was by companies that were foolhardy and getting, you know, high yield, you know, private lenders in that were more loan to own. The smart companies raised equity. And even though it may have been expensive, they were smart. So that's the other thing that'll be beneficial to the industry is once, you know, the Safe Banking Act is passed, I think probably maybe the States Act, banks will be more apt to provide cheap cost of capital mechanisms like working capital lines and different types of financing packages that will make businesses more efficient and run and just be easier to manage cash flow. So from the cannabis sector, you know, it's almost like the opposite. I mean, there's no debt, period. Now for the country and for a company USA, I mean, it's going to be hard. I mean, I think that it's, you know, the more your cost structure increases, then the harder it's going to be to compete with foreign producers. Now, who knows? You may see, you know, this administration and future administrations when we're still dealing with this debt, eliminate some of the imports that we take in now just to try to, you know, have the, you know, the buy at home mentality here, but it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. How about we potentially have negative real interest rates here? So, you know, maybe we'll say interest rates are 1 or 2%, but inflation's something higher than that. How do you think that impacts business overall, having this kind of negative real interest rate scenario? Is that great for borrowers that want to buy equipment and finance it? Or how do you feel about it in general?
Well, I mean, again, I mean, I my only focus right now is on cannabis. And
right.
So my macro views on economic policy and things like that, I really try to avoid just because, I mean, my God, the last thing this country needs is another opinion about anything that's quasi-political. So
right.
I just try to, I mean, when the politics impacts cannabis, then I'll voice my opinion. Otherwise, yeah. I kind of just try to, you know, keep it to myself and manage my own business that way. But for the cannabis sector, I think it's all positive stuff for the reasons I just said about, you know, not having any real debt that's out there that's causing problems with companies that didn't cause those problems themselves by taking on that high yield debt to begin with.
Okay. Obviously Harborside's a big name in California, has deep roots, mostly because of Stevie D'Angelo, as you mentioned, but you know, we don't have any national brands really to think of. Do you have any guesses on what a first national brand would be, like something, a flower, a drink? Any guesses?
Well, I don't. I think it'll likely be a, an edible or a liquid, just because those are, you know, I think those are probably something that it just appeals to the masses a bit more, and especially the new users. I think you saw the beginning stages of a dispensary creating a national footprint. I mean, I say national, but, you know, nationally legalized footprint, and that would be MedMen. But we all know what happened there, and it's you know, a long and sordid story. So I think there's an opportunity there, but I mean, let's face it. I mean, California is like two states in and of itself. I mean, the tastes and the wants and the product mix and all that are different in Northern California and Southern California. So yeah. If you can't have something that is unified in California, how are you going to have that same thing in New York when they legalize, or New Jersey or Massachusetts or even Nevada for that matter? So I think you're going to see some, but not all. And it's probably a product or two that'll do it. But that's why we're focused on California. I mean, it could be a $8 to $10 billion market in and of itself, and that's plenty big.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn to some personal development questions, Matt. Is there a book that's had a big impact on your life or way of thinking that you'd like to share?
Let's see. You know, it's funny. Whenever someone asks me a question like this, I always think back to childhood.
Yeah.
And the most impactful book that I think I read as a child and that I read to my daughter when she was young was The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. Okay. And it's the most simplistic book about, I mean, it's a tree that gives. And, you know, I think in this climate and the way we live right now, if we can't all, you know, come to the realization that we need to be more givers than takers, then we've got really big problems.
What do you think the most interesting thing going on in the cannabis field is, apart from what you're doing?
Oh, let's see. It probably just the wave of legalization. I mean, I know that's kind of a generic answer, but it's been so interesting for me, you know, having been in the game since 2014, just to watch the uptick in acceptance, not only across the nation, but heck, in my own backyard. I mean, people looked at me back in 14 like I was crazy to do this. In fact, I had people sit me down that were peers and mentors of mine and said, "You can't do this." I just said, "Well, I'm going to do it." So some of those same people have asked to get into our investment funds. And so that part is rewarding to me. But that's selfish. I mean, the main thing is it's, I get really excited and really jazzed when I see, you know, Gallup polls that are, you know, 70% acceptance across the nation, and hearing that even, you know, conservative Republicans are realizing that taxing and regulating this is a smarter way than just acting like it doesn't exist, because this is a conversion of a market. It's not a creation of one. And the sooner the people that are against this realize that, then the better off we'll all be, because we can all benefit from the tax proceeds that this can generate.
Here's a Peter Thiel question for you. What is one thought you have that most people disagree with you on?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's probably going to get into politics, which I'm going to avoid. So, but
oh, that's not fun. You don't want to alienate half the audience.
That's right. No, you know what? I'll say this. I'll make it for cannabis, because I got a lot of flack a couple of years ago when I think I was on a panel, and I said that I thought there were some parts of CBD product that was snake oil, and but what I still believe is that. I mean, you know, that's part of why we changed our name to Entourage Effect Capital. The Entourage Effect is the combination of the cannabinoids and the THC that brings the, you know, healing effects to the end user. And so I still believe that aspect of the plant is what's the most beneficial, is that combination. However, what I don't agree with on the CBD side of the business is the monstrous and egregious claims that are being made by companies that are, if they're not careful, as soon as the FTC or the FDA starts to opine seriously on this, they're going to get yanked off shelves. Because once the Farm Bill passed, CBD became effectively a nationally legalized product, and therefore ironically, more stringent regulatory aspects to it than THC products do.
Okay. Well, Matt, as we close, can you tell listeners how they can find out more about Harborside, the ticker symbol, where it trades, and also about Entourage Effect Capital?
Sure. So HBOR is the ticker. I think we're on the OTC and we're on the Canadian Securities Exchange. You can go to harborside.com to learn more about the company. And you also can go, it's shopharborside.com. Okay. But, and then also you can go to see us at eecpartners.com. Easier to type out than entourageeffectcapital.com, which works too. But that's how you can find us.
Okay. And who has better barbecue, North Carolina, Tennessee, or Texas?
It depends on what you're looking for. I think there's also, you could have folks from Kansas.
How about a brisket?
Well, it depends on how it's cooked. I mean, what's interesting is that you go get a chopped brisket sandwich in Memphis and in Texas or in Kansas City, and they're three different sandwiches completely.
That's true.
But I'm partial to Texas barbecue, so there's no doubt. And now especially in Dallas, we're getting these upscale barbecue joints now, which are, I mean, some of the meat, the cuts of meat are just phenomenal.
Oh, boy. Well, Matt, thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it, and good luck with everything you have going on in 2021.
Great, Matt. Thanks a lot.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments.
Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider.
Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.